Arizona boasts of many women who've made history both in the state and on the national stage. We all know the impact that Sandra Day O'Connor and Rose Mofford had, but in the show's Women of the West series, we highlight some of the lesser-known women whose stories shaped our state's history. Today, our focus turns to Refugio Bartholand Davazo, who lived from 1855 to 1921. Vanessa Fonseca Chavez, an assistant professor at ASU, is working on a project looking at the migrant journey from Mexico into the southwestern U.S. with a focus on women. That's part of what led her to Bartholand Davazo, who was married to one of the more infamous men of the era, Solomon Barth, known as the founder of St. John's, Arizona, though that's disputed.
I ran across her name, and she was a daughter of a well-known sheep herder in Monte Elena, New Mexico, which is where one of the most utilized stock drives were that ran west of Socorro to Springerville starting around 1885. And so I'm looking into this story and I'm wondering, how in the world does Solomon Barth come into contact with a Hispanic Catholic woman living in Cubero, New Mexico, because that's where she was born. That's not where her family ultimately lived. But so she was born in Cubero, New Mexico in 1855. Solomon Barth came across her path in 1874. He was in Cubero on some business with a couple of his brothers. And so he finds her and eventually they get married. But what's interesting about their marriage is that as part of her dowry to Solomon Barth, he's given 400 head of sheep, which is pretty significant for that time period because it allowed him to not only consolidate his wealth with that of a Spanish frontier family, but it allowed him to have some tangible wealth to carry with him into Arizona, where he arrived in St. John's in 1874. And so much of his initial success in Arizona is due to her family standing in western New Mexico and that sort of capital that she was able to gift him through this dowry.
The fact is that Solomon Barth is, to put it lightly, was a character. And
yes.
I think it's interesting when you did your research that it seems in terms of how they lived their lives, or at least how they were perceived, he and Refugio were seen in very different ways. She was much more respectable. Did that elicit any great stories, the fact that the two of them seemed to be kind of a contrast?
There is nothing in the archive necessarily that suggests that, you know, they, I mean, it's very clear that they lived different lives. They traveled separately. Very few times do you see any mention of them going to the same places together. She traveled back to Magdalena quite often to visit family. She was with her children later in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when they were in school. So it feels like they lived two very, very separate lives. I ran across her will the other day, and it talked about her estate and what she is giving to her children. And so all these different items, it sort of was like, these are the things that I have, but it never talks about collective property or anything like that. So he is a character. I'm not interested at all in his story, but I'm just wondering how her story gets hidden underneath sort of this ridiculous nature of her husband, who was involved in a lot more shady things in his life than I think that she was.
And can we talk a bit about the fact that, you know, she's Hispanic, married a non-Hispanic. How common was that during this time, even the fact that she had come from a wealthy family?
It was fairly common. There were lots of Hispanic women, and I'm thinking in New Mexico, you know, Nina Otero Warren, for example, who married Anglo men. This was, so in the research that I do, there are a number of cases where you see that Anglo men will marry Hispanic women because Hispanic women were able to inherit property during this time period. And so, I mean, one could argue, of course, that they were in love and da-da-da, but you can't help but think about some underlying motivators that are linked to land acquisition and property. And so I think that for a lot of these, you know, it was a way to consolidate, you know, sort of an old guard moving into a new guard, and to think about the way that Hispanic families planned for their future success. And a lot of that happened through marriage with white men. But it was also a way for white men to obtain property in ways that they would not have been able to obtain it otherwise.
The only extended profile written about her was by her son, Isaac. Did it seem like you wrote it as an affectionate son? Did you write it as someone who was writing it as more of a list of accomplishments of this woman who should have gotten more regard? How would you characterize what you learned from that?
So I haven't seen the archive yet. I did contact the University of Arizona archives to get a copy of that newspaper article. But I do think that, you know, of course, she had a good relationship with her oldest son, Isaac Barth. When she was in Albuquerque, when he was working as a New Mexico territorial senator, she was living in his home and his siblings were living there while they were going to school. So it seemed like he was a very big advocate for his mother. He was a defender of his mother. There are lots of op-eds and editorials written in the St. John's Herald about Isaac really trying to defend the name of his family. And I think that that's very interesting. He was named as the executor of her will when she wrote her will at 57 years of age. And then she died in 1921, so about 9 years after she wrote that will. But everything was given, all the power was given to her son Isaac to determine what was going to happen to her belongings through her will.
Sounds like she was quite religious, quite a devout Catholic. Did you learn anything about how that impacted her effect on the community?
I did. So I recently traveled to St. John's and I was able to visit the Catholic cemetery. And I think it's just really interesting to see, you know, the Catholic cemetery has these different sort of family plots, right? So the Tafoyas have a section and the Barths have a section and the Chavises have a section. And the Barth section is very carefully curated. So it has this wrought iron fence around it. It looks sort of like grandiose compared to the rest of the plots that are in that cemetery. And then in the Catholic Church in St. John's, the St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, there are two stained glass windows that are in memory of Solomon Barth and Refugio Landovaso Barth. So I think it's really interesting to think about the kind of legacy that they have. They also donated by way of Clara and Cecilia Barth, who were the last executors of their estate. They were the two daughters that were never married. And so they stayed in St. John's to run the store and then to take care of all the different properties. And so when they passed away, there was land that was given to different entities within the town of St. John's. So not just the Catholic Church, but the LDS Church and other entities. And right now there is a pretty hefty feud going on with the Catholic Church in St. John's over whether or not they should sell the Barth Ranch that was given to them by the family. Land means a lot to folks, right? And so for the same reason that, you know, Solomon Barth was able to, you know, take part in these various, again, shady land acquisitions throughout Eastern Arizona, you know, that land continues to be very contentious for people. And there are Hispanic families that are in the town of St. John's presently that think that keeping the land is the only way to go about it.
Vanessa Fonseca Chavez is an assistant professor at ASU. We've been talking about the life of Refugio Barth Landovaso.